Hello, friends. On today's show, Buffalo, 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 Buffalo. And that's a good thing. Mechanics finally get to read magazines for the articles. And playful people go to these newfangled hotels and oldfangled depots. That's coming up. Jessica, please give us the intro.
We all need that one friend, don't we? The one that, no matter how crazy things get around us, always has some good news to share? Hey, what if you had two friends like that? That's twice the good times. On the rocks? Not for long, because everything sounds better when you're two beers in. Now, here are your hosts, Brett Weaver and Monica Ballard.
My navigation went all fluky. I mean, like the poles shifted or something like that. It was turning my map like upside down and things like that. It was weird. It was.
And all you heard was dun 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 dun.
It was strange.
I'm all sad because I don't have my normal tablet because I forgot to. The way these tablets work is that you charge them up, right?
Uh-huh.
Turn them on, Sure. Then you look at whatever it is you're going to look at, but you have to remember to then close all the things.
Oh.
Because if it has something running, it just runs down the battery. Even though the thing is turned off.
Yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of being turned off, you're listening to Two Beers In.
Two Beers In. Because it's cold today.
That's right.
It's
brisk.
Cold, so it's
brisk. It's quite
yes, it
cold.
Is.
It's brr.
It is a podcast where we talk about the weather and complain and complain about tablets.
That's what makes it so, you know, portable and relevant.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Months later.
Because the weather will be exactly like this
exactly.
In 6 months.
It's okay. I've already got a thing that's going to completely lock in the time period that people
good.
Know where we're at.
Good.
I am one of your hosts, Brett Weaver. I'm enjoying a gin and tonic in a tall glass with a splash of Angostura bitters. By the way, thank you, Doug.
You're welcome.
For buying my drinks.
Uh-huh. Poverty has hit him.
Yeah, wait until later. I'm Monica Ballard, your co-host. I'm enjoying my second drink here called the Curtis.
Is it the same drink as the first one?
It doesn't taste the same. Different bartender.
Oh yeah, there looks like there was a shift change.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it...
This drink is less superior than the last one.
Do we
that
need
I
to
had.
Go down to Busty's and?
Well, what's in a Curtis?
Bunch of liquor.
he picked okay,
up.
Okay, don't
two,
get too expert on me.
He picked up two bottles
and threw it in
and poured them in with a dash of soda.
Yeah.
And a lime.
I was worried that it might be a Matt Dillon, which is like,
Like
who did you make mad?
No.
Okay.
So
no,
you're
not
guessing
that at
it's
all.
Formaldehyde and brake fluid.
That's right.
Yeah.
And speaking of formaldehyde and brake fluid,
there's
Doug over here.
Yeah, that's me. And I have a Pacifico, a nice summer beer.
Yes.
Because I'm counterculture, apparently.
Well, we are on Corona Lane.
Lane, right off of Cameron Road. And by the way, we're at Nomad.
Yes.
Which is spelled just down the road from Busty's, actually.
Spelled
K-N-O-M-A-D.
You got to be in the know.
No.
Once you learned how to spell knife, you never got past
it. Nomad used to have, and I don't know if they still do, but they had one of the best punk rock karaoke's. They'd have a live band.
Interesting.
Here and would do punk rock karaoke.
I'm down.
Kidoki.
Oh, it was so much fun.
All right.
So we've got four stories that we're going to tell you about today as we imbibe. Sure. We'll call it whatever you want.
Going to swallow a bib.
What's in that?
I don't know. I as soon as I said it, I'm like, nope, that's not the way you say it.
That's not a thing, Brett.
I want to talk about trains, one of Doug's favorite subjects.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Trains.
He's like, why?
don't know. I like them in board games and video games.
Yeah. It's like, as long as I'm subjugating the continent,
absolutely.
I'm fine.
As long as I'm making income off those idiots in there.
If I have to ride on one,
No, there's my line.
All right, we're coming back to that.
Yeah. So the first story is unused train stations across U.S. are being revitalized into hotels and museums and all kinds of
and
good
the
stuff.
Houston Astros ballpark.
Yep. Well, just the space.
The old Union Pacific Railroad
Terminal.
Specific?
The Union
Pacific?
Yes, Union
Pacific. Yeah, what are you drinking, Doug?
It's a rented tongue. Yeah. Yeah. Union Pacific Railroad thing. Was
yeah,
what they
it was
built
it was up. The ball field at Union Station.
Yeah.
And then it became the House of Gas.
Enron.
Enron Field.
Oh,
and then it became Minute Maid Field, and I think it still is.
No, it is.
It just got renamed.
Really?
What is it now?
Oh, I don't. I can't remember.
Dicks.
It's something like that. Yeah.
The noun and noun.
We are good fact checkers.
Yeah. So across America, American cities, old unused rail depots and train stations are seeing second lives as hotels. Along with preserving relics of America's past, these structures are often made of stone or brick and were built with the intention of welcoming tens of people per day, making them strong and long-lasting as well as aesthetically lovely. So most of these have been in disuse since the 1980s. In Detroit, the Michigan Central Station, Denver's Union Station, and Salt Lake City's Pacific Union Station are three examples. Mission Central Station has now been resuscitated thanks to a major investment by Ford. Guess how much money they invested in this?
$4.
Yep.
$12.
$1 billion.
$1 billion with a B.
With
a
bill.
Woo.
And a pinky.
And a pinky.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
$1 billion.
$1 billion, turning it into a multi-use facility that includes 13 acres of parks, office space for startups, along with some Ford itself. A hotel will occupy 4 of the 16 floors in the main tower. Amazing. Denver's Union Station used to welcome 50,000 passengers per day, but since the very early 2000s, it's enjoyed only a fraction of that. Though never abandoned, it was very much out of touch until a $54 million in renovations changed it into a hive of activity centered around a luxury hotel. So cafes, shops, and dining venues all enjoy the light from the massive arched windows in the central hall, which contributed to the revival of the station as an actual train station, with rail traffic increasing back to 10,000 passengers per day by 2024. So that's pretty cool. All of this really does remind me of like the Pearl in San Antonio, which was the Pearl Brewery, which
and
it brings up the old adage, you can't build old.
Right, yes.
Yeah, you can't build old. So in Salt Lake City, Union Pacific Depot saw a decline in rail traffic after Amtrak took over the lines from Rio Grande. Doug hates Amtrak.
I don't have any strong feelings about Amtrak.
Oh, okay. By 1986, even Amtrak departed to a station 3 blocks south. Again, reminding me of how a firm bought a Greyhound and closed all the bus depots.
Yeah.
Because real estate was worth more.
Yeah, real estate was worth more.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, no. I know. It's like,
Yeah, makes sense.
So in 1997, both of these were discontinued and the depot was made redundant. But in 2006, three floors opened as a restaurant and a music venue known as The Depot. What original name.
Hey.
But in 2024, it became walls and roof of the Asher Adams Hotel. You know Asher Adams?
I know Ansel Adams.
No, Asher Adams was one of the people that did the Transcoastal Railway. What is it? Transcontinental Railway.
Trans-Siberian Orchestra?
Yep, that's right.
Am I helping?
Yep. This depot contained 225 rooms and 13 luxury suites. And it's also the gateway to the Gateway Development. Also, very original name.
Yes.
A large shopping... I think all of them have naming rights. They just call it the Gateway because they're waiting for the naming
rights.
They
just keep turning to the same four-year-old. What do we name this?
Yes.
Depot.
What do we call the depot?
Depot.
Cool.
Brilliant.
What do we call the gateway?
Gateway. What do we call the bathroom?
Bathroom.
We really shouldn't have made the CEO hereditary. Yeah. Yeah. He'll hear you.
Economically and environmentally, it makes a lot of sense to preserve what you have, said Diana Melikar, president of the Melikar Architects, who happened to renovate several train stations in similar communities. Well, of course you would say that.
Well, sure.
Sure.
What's she going to say?
She says, if they have good bones, these buildings built of rock, stone, or brick will last another century.
There is a very beautiful hotel, former train station in Nashville. It's stunning.
Is it called the Nashville Station?
Yeah. I forget what it's called, but I think it's called, you know, Union or something like that. But yes, it is stunning. I went inside there and took all kinds of pictures.
Yeah.
And it looks like Grand Central Station. And,
sure.
And it's.
Oh. I'm mad at myself that I never went to Penn Station when I was in New York.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've been there. It's a station.
Sure.
It's a lot more confusing than it looks like in the movies. In the movies, it looks like one big room.
Yes.
And that's it.
Yeah. Nope.
But yeah.
Nope.
There's lots of little loops and stuff in there, and it's like, ugh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to take the next one?
Sure.
Burp. Okay. I'll take this one.
Yeah.
Now she's just reading a text thread.
Monica, I'm just being playful with you because studies say that playful people prove more resilient during COVID. They excelled in lemonading.
In lemonade?
Lemonading.
They've turned it into a verb.
Yep.
That's right. Adults with high levels of playfulness showed strong resilience during the COVID-19 pandemic compared to less playful individuals.
Like Doug.
Yes.
The Oregon State University study is important because playfulness is a vital but underappreciated resource for building resilience and maintaining well-being during difficult periods such as, a pandemic or, current times. And it's a resource that individuals can cultivate. So Sharon Shen, the director of Health, Environment, and Leisure Research Lab, or HEAL.
See, now there's a name. Yes. There's someone who came up with or called the lab. No.
Yes. She led the study, and she says, understanding how playful people navigate adversity can inform interventions and strategies to help people cope with stress and uncertainty.
Mm-hmm.
Highly playful people were just as realistic about risks and challenges as others, but they excelled at lemonading, creating, imagining, and pursuing the positive, as well as discovering ways to create moments of joy, even in difficult circumstances. Mm-hmm. So they're talking about making lemonade out of lemons.
Or they listen to Beyonce.
I assume that this is all just code for people on drugs.
No.
No.
Someone who wasn't playful would say something like that, Doug.
That's true.
Really? You're right. Jokes are definitely not playful.
Someone without an optimistic viewpoint.
You know what's funny?
I want to go back to Iraq. You're mean here.
You know what? I think actually Doug is more hopeful than the three of us. He's the most hopeful person.
Yeah, he's not scrambling for a living anymore.
No, he's like
that. It's kind of like,
because I feel great.
Okay, whatever. Got to replace the washer. But
boy, there are a lot of people who are scared around me. I'll have another beer.
Yeah.
So Shannon, co-researcher Zoe Crawley, broke a study group of more than 500 American adults into two subgroups, those with low levels of playfulness, as measured by the Adult Playfulness Trust Scale.
Or APTC.
I've seen that website.
Apps.
Totally made up. Totally made up. It's like, when we got a grant, we're going to call it the Adult Playfulness Trait Scale.
Ma'am, I have a question for you right now. Do you feel more playful, just playful enough, or less playful?
Less playful.
Please check here.
On a scale of 1
that
to
10. That was a right. Great Ben Stein impression.
Yeah. They, share, like,
they shared similar perceptions of risk and protective factors as their less playful peers, but demonstrated greater optimism when envisioning future possibilities, mm-hmm. engaged in more creative problem solving, and managed to infuse quality and enjoyment into everyday activities.
Mm-hmm.
They actively altered challenging situations, found creative substitutes for what was lost, viewed obstacles as opportunities for growth. What did we talk about earlier today?
That's right.
Viewing those opportunities.
That's what I'm doing.
And maintained a strong sense of control over their responses.
Yes.
All right. So,
yeah, it's good. They said playfulness doesn't distort reality. It enhances it, said Chin. And while our study focused on measuring rather than developing playfulness, research suggests several approaches to cultivate this quality.
Oh, let's go over some of them, shall we?
Here are some examples.
Oh, good. Let's get a dry list.
Yeah.
Doug, playful.
Doug, when you're saying this to me, are you being more playful? Just
well,
playful
about to
enough?
Play all over your...
Yeah, that's right. So here's a few. Engaging in activities that spark joy and curiosity. Sure.
Okay.
Being open to new experiences, including experimenting with drugs. No.
No,
with
no,
new ways
no,
of
no.
doing...
I knew it!
Shit.
Yeah. Doing new...
I knew it!
...of doing routine activities.
Creating using drugs.
Yeah, creating opportunities for spontaneity and unstructured exploration, which is always nice. You're like, what's down that way? Let's go look.
I like unstructured exploration, but my probation officer keeps telling me cut it out.
Well, yeah, the leg, the ankle brace bracelet keeps going off on him.
Yeah,
hanging out with people who make you laugh.
Nah, got nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Embracing, you know, it's Doug's last show. So embracing moments
nice
of silliness.
Nice knowing you guys. Bye.
Bye.
And by saying that, I'm embracing moments of silliness when appropriate. So there we go. So there's a lot more that says, like, even during hectic times, dedicating 5 to 10 minutes daily, just like be... This was the part that kind of made me laugh because it says, even during hectic times, dedicating 5 to 10 minutes daily for a small dose of play, whether solo or shared, can make meaningful difference, which it reminds me of one company that I worked for where they said we wanted you to engage in the fish philosophy, which is... you know, finding joy in these moments.
Yes.
But very specifically, and it's very controlled amounts. And that's what that feels like a little bit to me.
Only
like,
during cigarette breaks.
But
you have to keep your pants on.
Yes, keep your pants on.
Jesus.
Oh, yeah. Man.
Yeah.
I've got a kind of a chicken and egg question. Isn't it hard to be a playful person if you're already suffering from low energy, depression, that kind of stuff?
As a person who was suffering through depression for a year there or a bit, I still tried to find, I mean, I continued with this podcast. That's kind of like, no, I was depressed, but I'm going to keep doing these moments of silliness and keeping my sense of humor as much as I possibly can, because I know the other direction is not the answer.
The other direction's not good, and that gives you some balance.
I'm going to make the effort, damn
enough,
it.
Enough where Doug says, Brett, I'm a little worried about you, buddy.
About you.
So I'm going to Houston for a couple of months because you've worn me out.
Yeah. Yeah, hey, little buddy.
I'm tired.
Even Houston traffic is more optimistic than you.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm
absolutely.
Going back
to Iraq. They have a Mac.
Right.
Oh, hey, what happened?
There's an obvious joke in the title of this next subject, but I'm going to try to keep off of it as much as I possibly can. So
I won't.
A dyslexic Englishman who was never properly taught how to read in school has finally been able to enjoy a copy of a magazine he bought in 1985.
Oh,
well,
boy.
Sure. When you're only buying
other
it,
than the pictures?
When you're buying it for the articles.
Right.
Like, that's exactly.
Yeah.
Because
all three of us.
I'm trying to figure out how long it takes for them to tell me the name of the magazine.
Yeah,
that he
right.
bought. So, Ted Midgley has learned how to read at 58 years old, which is my age, thanks to the help of a tutor who told the BBC that adults without the ability to read are actually more common in UK than one might think. Midgley was born in Bradford, England, where he struggled in school and was dubbed lazy by the teaching staff.
That's where they make the pears.
Yep. The stinky trees. It was only when he had arrived in middle school that someone reached out to his parents and suggested Ted might be dyslexic. Leaving middle school, he was moved to another institute for those with learning impairments, but struggled and eventually drifted out of the education system and went to work for a textile mill. No one reading needs to feel sorry for Midgley, as despite his inability to read, he had a rewarding career as a mechanic for the specialist motorcycles used in a unique British motorsport called Speedway.
Speedway!
Speedway!
Sunday.
In which the riders compete on a dirt oval track with single-gear dirt bikes that have no brakes.
Oh, great.
Great. Well, he's 58, and he made it through, so good for him.
I was going to say, that would cure a lot of things, not only dyslexia.
Yeah. He's got to travel around the world for races, and it acted as a genesis for his desire to learn how to read. I'm not going to do the accent. I got involved with a young chap from Australia called Braden Elliott, and it's gone really well, and I wanted to become his manager. That's what I'd like to do, Midgley told BBC. But to do that, I need to read. He's been taking two 30-minute lessons from Duncan Livesey. A tutor with Reed Easy Derby. It was brilliant because Ted's so positive. He's been so easy to teach. It's been so rewarding, and I get a buzz each time I sit down with him. As well as reading Elliot's emails, Midgley was able to read something a lot more special. See, that's all the way to the
all
end.
All right, here we go.
It
Coming
was not
finish.
Hustler Magazine. It was not Penthouse Forum.
It was junk.
I never
it
thought this
not,
would happen to me.
It not was
on
not
a motorbike without any brakes.
<That's> right. It was a copy of Speedway Star magazine he bought 40 years before. I had this for so long, I've never been able to read it. It was amazing to do it, and all the information is just useless to me now.
That's right, because it's an old magazine.
That's right.
Oh, that's what I should have done before injectors.
As soon as I started reading it, I'm like, it was Penthouse.
Yes.
Penthouse. No?
Yeah.
Playboy, because you read it for the articles.
Take that, phone. Serves you right.
I know.
You want to try this last one?
On her now broken phone? Good.
I can open it, yeah.
Did you do it again, Monica?
I got this.
Okay.
Bison ranchers return thousands of animals to native lands and witness total rejuvenation of ecosystem.
Yay.
A tribal-led nonprofit is creating a network of native bison ranchers that are restoring ecosystems on the Great Plains, restoring native ranchers' connections with their ancestral land, and restoring the native diet that their ancestors relied on. Called the Tunka Fund, They coordinate donors and partners to help ranchers secure grazing land areas, funds needed to install and repair fencing, increase their herd sizes, and access markets for bison meat across the country.
Yay.
The return of bison means the return of the prairie.
Yes.
One of the three great grassland ecosystems on the planet, of which just 1% remains as it was when the Mayflower arrived.
Wow.
Bringing buffaloes back to their ancestral homelands is essential to restoring the ecosystem. We know that the buffalo is a keystone species. That was from Dawn Sherman, a member of the Lakota, Delaware, Shawnee, and Cree.
She's all over that.
Yeah, man, man. They accepted her everywhere.
Yep.
Bringing the buffalo back to our land and to our people helps restore the ecosystem and everything it supports, from the animals to the plants to the people. It comes full circle. The circle of life.
Wrong show.
That's how we see it.
Colors of the Wind would have been better.
The long-billed curlew uses bison dung as a disguise to hide nests from predators.
Yep.
Deer, pronghorn antelope, and elk all rely on bison to plow through deep snows and uncover the grasses that these smaller animals can't reach.
I love this next paragraph.
Everywhere the bison hurls its massive body, life springs in the beast's wake. When bison roll about on the plains, it creates depressions known as wallows.
Wallows.
These fill with rainwater and create enormous puddles where amphibians and insects thrive and reproduce. Certain plants evolved to grow in the wet conditions of the wallows, which Native Americans harvested for food and medicine.
I love that paragraph.
Yes. Yes. I should have gone into my best David Attenborough there or something.
Yes.
I just love
everywhere the bison hurls its massive body.
Yes.
It's like, all right.
Yeah.
All right.
Hurl that massive body, Mr. Bison.
Sometimes that makes me feel like myself everywhere. I hurl my massive body.
It does remind you of a kink you use a lot, right?
Call me Buffalo.
Sherman says some of these native ranchers are bringing bison into lands still visibly affected by the Dust Bowl.
Yeah.
And already the animals are acting like the great woolly cure-all for the land's ills.
Oh, Lord. Someone got fancy.
Oh, yeah.
I love it.
Since 2020, the Tonka Fund, in partnership with the Intertribal Buffalo Council.
Wow. Sounds, I want to be on that board.
Sounds made up. Right? Yeah. And the Nature Conservancy have overseen the transfer of 2,300 bison from Nature Conservancy reserves to lands managed by ranchers within the Tonka Fund network. So, yeah, there's a video there that we'll link in our show notes.
Yep.
And you can perhaps watch bison hurling themselves to create a wallow.
Man, I'm losing my shirt on this business. Nobody's buying bison burgers. What am I going to tell the wife? I got an idea.
I got to say, I think that has been a wasted opportunity.
Bison burgers? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, they need to. I mean, they were, white people were dicks for killing all the bison.
Thank God we're all good now.
Yeah.
Yes.
We're all good now.
Oh, we're so much better now.
We said, here, you can have this land for now.
Tell you what, this land is your land, but this land
it's
is
also
my land.
Also, this land is my land. This land is your land. This land is my land.
I hadn't really thought about the meaning of that song.
Yeah.
It really was specific.
It's darker. It's way darker than
you
thought.
Yeah.
We were being programmed very early.
Very much. You know what we want to program you to do?
Yeah, I know.
We want you to program you to go to patreon.com/2beersin, where there you can participate in democracy. That's right. I said it. By
by, because money is speech.
It's got to happen somewhere.
Money is speech, so let your voice be heard as much as you possibly want by giving us money at patreon.com/2beersin. You can email us also, because money on PayPal and Venmo doesn't actually mean anything. So give us money by going to 2beersin.
Is it like Bitcoin?
Yep, what? It's exactly like Bitcoin. Give it a try. Find out.
Sure. What have you got to lose?
2beersin at weightlesspod.com.
Financial advice not approved by any reputable source.
Doug's like, don't do it.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
Don't do it.
Be like riding Amtrak. You're just wasting your money.
Oh, that's so funny. When I made the show notes, you know, I use the previous episode and I copy it and then I just reformat it to the new information. So I'm sitting here going, wow, I put a bunch of stuff after the song that we're going to do. And I'm like, oh, that was from the week before that.
I still find
details,
it fascinating.
Details.
Yes.
But you won't, because you've heard it already.
So here's the thing, is by the time you hear this, it will be Mardi Gras it'll be the day before Mardi Gras in Louisiana.
Yes.
Yes.
You're hearing it as we drop.
Yes, as we drop. And so I wanted to, because I'm Cajun and I'm allowed, I wanted to share with y'all a song that you would hear.
Ooh, I thought you were getting naked, didn't you?
No.
I thought Doug, I would have to show something to get beads.
I was going
to
say, Doug, you've already seen my tits. So.
That's true.
But as we know, Mardi Gras, or if you don't know, like really, come on, man. Just do a little bit of research and figure it out.
Come on.
Mardi Gras is the day before Ash Wednesday.
Yes.
Which is a Catholic holiday when everybody...
is hardly a Catholic holiday.
It's not a holiday.
It's an observance.
Observance, yes. Where you put ashes on your forehead and give something up for 40 days and 40 nights.
40 days, yeah.
Yep, 40 days. And so what you do, because... Well, it's not just Cajuns, but it was anybody that observes this, because there's carnival, there's all these different ones.
Yeah.
What you do is like... get out of your system whatever it is you're giving up.
Yeah.
That's what the whole thing is about. And, of course, New Orleans and a lot of these other places have taken it to the extreme to where we're like, we're going to party. We're going to do all of this. I mean, for me, it was always – I always gave up bear meat for
– oh, interesting.
So I'd always eat some bear meat on Fat Tuesday, which is what Mardi Gras means. That's French.
Right.
And –
sure you did.
That was always the joke, is I'm giving up bear meat for Lent.
I think I'll probably give up sex, because chances are the opportunity of that coming up. But wouldn't it be a quirk of nature or God?
Yes.
You know, to lay that opportunity in front of me, so to speak.
Yeah,
God
really.
God was like,
it's
all right,
like, okay,
here it is.
Here it is. It was like, oh, damn it.
I can't believe you tempted me. Thank you.
There's this 60-year-old man who's interested in talking to you, who's very much into musical theater, but not in that way.
He has very like opinions on Jesus Christ Superstar.
That's right.
Yes.
And that he doesn't like them.
And
wait, do you like Jesus Christ Superstar?
I directed it for my master's thesis.
That's right. I couldn't remember. So. I thought you had done...
Who doesn't like it?
Well, I thought you had done the other one.
Godspell?
Godspell.
No, I had my own touring company of Godspell.
There we go.
I had my own illegal touring company of Godspell.
What you makes it illegal?
What makes we didn't pay rights?
Okay, got it.
We paid. We sort of, you know,
dealing drugs, or you didn't pay rights.
Stole the show and the songs and
makes
sense.
Equity would like a word.
Please. Yeah, right.
It was 1973. So sure,
they're like,
go ahead.
Well, yeah, you know statute of limitations is way past.
You know, we're cool. 7 years is that?
Yeah, right.
Who knows?
I've already gotten through my lint when it comes on this.
I've got something to say about JC Superstore in the Patreon.
We should
episode.
Do that. Okay. Yep, yep. So before I hit this song, which was, I actually did a lot of searching because I picked out like six different songs. I'm like, yeah, it's too long. Yeah, it's too repetitive.
Did you go to the Bone Shakers?
No.
No?
No.
They're a good Cajun band.
No, I did. Well,
he did the Rump Shakers.
So, okay, I'll have to do my shame. I'll also have my shame conversation about Cajun music and the Patreon.
Okay, all right.
But instead, I went on to New Orleans, picked out Professor Longhair.
Oh, sure.
And we're going to play Go to the Mardi Gras.
Right.
Because it's a good song.
Yeah.
And I've been your host. Before I push that button over there, I've been your host, Brett Weaver. I'm going to have Doug buy me probably another gin and tonic.
Asparagus, please.
I'm your co-host, Monica. I'm enjoying the second drink called the Curtis.
Okay.
Here at, where are we again?
Nomad.
Yes.
Kanomad.
Kanomad off of Cameron Road in Austin,
Texas.
But
it's not as good as the first one I had because they changed bartenders.
Yep.
Can I have
the first bartender?
Yeah, really? Could she make it better?
Yeah. Can I trade this for the first one I had?
No,
yeah.
No, you're cute too, but could I?
Yeah, that's right. It's not because you're black.
No.
Really?
No.
I'm black.
No. Thank you,
Monica. No. Why don't we quickly move over to Doug?
And I'm having a Pacifico and I'm panic attack.
Yeah.
Quick! Lemonade!
We love you and we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Tell you what's Carnival for. Get your ticket in your hand. You wanna go to New Orleans. Get your ticket in your hand. You wanna go to New Orleans. You know when you get to New Orleans, somebody'll show you the Zulu King. You'll see the Zulu King down on St. Claude and Dumas. You know you see the Zulu King down on St. Claude and Dumas. And if you stay right there, I'm sure you'll see the Zulu Queen.
Good news, everyone.